What an enjoyable service we've had so far. Hello, my name is Art Cummings. Some of you know me. Some of you don't have a clue who I am. That's okay. I'm one of you. I'm just a sinner saved by grace and trying to serve my Lord and Master in this life. You can tell by looking at me, I've been around the block a couple times. And I am going to share with you today some things that I've learned over the years that probably nothing new to you, but things that I think are really important for us today. You know, in life, I've noticed that as we get older, we tend to begin to reflect back over our life. And all of you, I'm sure, can identify with that to some extent. And those of you who are young will be able to identify with that more as you get older. What I've noticed, I've been around quite a few people who were dying on their deathbed. And one of the things that I've become intensely aware of, when people are on their deathbed, is that what's on their mind is family, relationships, or close relationships. There's very, very few people, there may be some, but most people in their dying days, you never hear them say, "Oh, I wish I had spent more time on the job. I wish I had earned more money. I wish I had invested more in the stock market. I wish I had had a nicer home. I wish I had gotten a higher degree in education." Those are not the kind of things that are on their mind. The kind of things that are on their mind are their relationships. You know, in the book of Matthew, and also it's repeated in the book of Mark, some of these religious people of that day ask our Savior, they ask Jesus, what's the most important commandment? And his reply was, "Love the Lord your God with all your mind, heart and soul, and your neighbor as yourself." Now, if you go back through the Old Testament and all the laws and rules and regulations that are given there, some people have come up with over 600. Jesus boiled it down to two statements. Love God, love your neighbor. Love God, love people. You know, today, as believers, we're trying to serve our Heavenly Father. We're finding that we are being assaulted on all sides. The family's being assaulted on all sides. Next month in June, the Supreme Court of the United States is going to make a ruling about the definition of marriage. Now, I don't know how they're going to rule, but I know what the trend is, and you know what the trend is. And we know that the trend is away from what God has defined as marriage. I find it interesting that before sin ever entered the world, back in the book of Genesis, God, of course, created all the things in the world, and then he created man and woman. He established the Sabbath, and he established marriage. Before the fall, before sin ever entered, those were the two foundation stones there that he established right there in before the fall. Now, of course, since the fall, these things have eroded. We find already it started eroding with Abraham and Sarah and the other patriarchs and their wives and on down. There were troubles in those close relationships. Until today, I am deeply concerned about our marriages, our families, that we keep them strong. We have lived in a country where it's been extremely easy to live your Christian principles. But times are changing, folks. And I believe that our faith is going to be tried. It's going to be tried severely. And we need to have strong marriages, strong families to stand on. Strong fellowships like this here this morning. But the backbone of this fellowship are the families, individual families, individual marriages. If that's not strong, it's hard for you to have a strong fellowship here. So I want to talk to you about that. I could talk a long time, but I don't have much time, so I'm going to move right along here. I'll project some things on the screen here. Starting with that statement there, marriage is it a Humpty Dumpty on the wall type experience for most people? Or is it an exciting life of growth? Or maybe is it kind of a mixture of those two things? You remember the nursery rhyme from school? Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. And all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. For some people, marriage becomes like that. It's a fragile thing. Not based on a solid foundation. Not based on two individuals who have strong faith in Jesus. And when trouble or problems come along, there's the fall. And the fall is so great that all the king's horses and all the king's men just can't get it back together again for them. I want to tell you that if we follow God's, what God has to say about marriage, and I can't cover it all here this morning, that it can be an exciting life of growth, continuing to grow and grow and grow to the point where you never reach the end of it. I'm going to start here with 5 points here. Point number one is up there for you to look at. Point number one, men and women were both created in God's image. Did you know every one of you reflect a part of the image of God? Now, none of you have the total image of God. None of you are totally like God, but we have a little bit of that God-likeness in us. Isaiah says that, for as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways. God is so much greater and bigger and more wonderful than we can comprehend. But he's given each one of us a little bit of his image. Now, I think that's an important concept that we understand, particularly when you enter into marriage, that the man has a part of the image of God in him, and the woman has a part of the image of God in her. You put the two together, and you've got more of an understanding of what God is like than just what you have by yourself. Because each one of you has been given a little bit of that picture of what God is like. Now, it's true that we come into marriage very different sometimes. One of you might be an extrovert, and one of you might be an introvert. One of you might be a late night person, an early morning person. One of you might be a perfectionist. One of you might not care much about that kind of thing. One of you might be a neat freak. You know, everything's got to be perfect, be clean, and one of you might be, you don't care much about what a room and a vacuum cleaner is for. We're very different. But God has created each one of us differently. And so if you can enter into marriage, and even those of you who have been married 40, 50 years, if you can begin to look at your mate that in a different light, it can do so much to change things. Number two, men and women are both very different. This is not earth-shaking information for anybody, I don't think. Men and women are both very different. God created them that way, and how they think, their minds are different, their brains are wired different. They experience emotions different. They act differently, and they talk differently. Number three, men and women have very different communication styles. Very different communication styles. Some communicate with a lot of detail, some communicate with very little detail. Some talk in very different ways. Number four, try not to spend too much time on any one of these. Both styles of communication are equally valid. I think that's important to understand. Her way of saying it is as equally valid as his way of saying it. Number five, our goal is not to try to change someone's style of communication, but to adapt to it. Now, God created us like this, and it's evident even as little children. We take a look at little boys and little girls, and we notice these things. Little girls are verbal oriented. Little boys in general, now there's exceptions to this, but little boys are nonverbal. Little girls like to talk. Little boys like to make noises. Little girls are people-oriented. Little boys are things-oriented. Little girls try to solve conflicts. Little boys try to prolong conflicts. Little girls communicate to be liked. Little boys communicate to boast. Well, as we grow up, we notice that women, when they talk, tend to talk more than men. The average woman speaks 15,000 words a day. The average man, around 9,000. Most of the man's words are used in his employment, on the job. And we'll try to speak a little later as to why that is. Women are employed too, but when they come home, that's when they really want to talk. The man doesn't have any words left to use. Well, sometimes we might create some difficulty. But it's not anything that is unsolvable. Men are bottom line oriented. What's the bottom line? Get to the point. Don't beat around the bush. I don't want to hear all the details. I just want to hear the bottom line. Women are more detailed. First, I got to give you all the details. Detail, detail, details. It's important for them. Men communicate to find solutions. They're problem solvers. They want to take care of the problem. Whenever a problem comes up, that's what they want to deal with. Solve the problem. Women communicate more in dealing with feelings and emotions. Men tend to think it through first before talking. When there's a problem, they don't say much. They think it through. And then when they feel they've got an answer, they talk about it. Women are pretty much the opposite. They think out loud. Well, maybe we could do it this way. Maybe we could do it this way. Let's try this. Well, no, that won't work. Why don't we try this? They think out loud. Now, is one wrong and the other right? No. This is the way God created man and woman. Both bearing the image of God, coming together, and what a growing experience it can be, and what a bonding experience it can be. You understand? We understand these things, and don't let them become irritants to us. Now, I want to give just a few examples now in the next few minutes to illustrate for you different situations. But first, I want to turn to the scripture in the book of Ephesians. And you've heard this one, these scriptures read before, but let me just refer to them again. And maybe I'll point out something that's different for you to understand. It made a big difference when I came to understand this. In Ephesians chapter 5, and I'll just read this part of this section here, where he talks about husbands and wives and how our marriage relationship is an example of the relationship of Christ and the church. Beginning in verse 25. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it, just as Christ does the church, for we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. The King James says reverence her husband. I'm reading from the New International. Respect. So here we have stated two different needs that are become very evident for those who have studied marriages and men and women. Man's greatest need is somehow to gain respect. A woman's greatest need is to feel loved. Now that word love there is not talking about romantic love alone. That's understood, that romantic love is going to be in any, should be in any marriage. But this word love here is not the word that's used for romantic love, the kind of love that attracts us to each other through our, the hormones in our body and that type of natural thing. That's not what this is talking about. Not that kind of love. That's understood that that's needed in a marriage for both men and women. This is a higher level that we're talking about here, that a man and a woman grow into in their marriage, where the man learns to love his wife with agape type of love, a godly type of love. And the woman learns to show respect for her husband as she shows reverence and respect for God. A higher level of valuing one another above the level of natural romantic love, which is certainly very important in a marriage and that one must be kept alive. But what happens is that when that higher level is not there, the romantic side of it many times begins to die out. When the higher level is there, it keeps that romantic love alive throughout a lifetime. And it grows and grows. Now the thing that happens is that because we are different, we allow these things to come in and cause irritations. I'm going to give you a few illustrations here now. The first one is, men usually make direct requests. Women often hint at what they want. Men usually make direct requests. Women often hint at what they want. It's a little difficult to understand why that is, and I'm not sure I fully understand it, but I know it's true. And when we know it's true, men should be able to begin to pick up on these hints. Why it is that women can't always just come right out and say, "This is what I want," rather than hint. Now, I have heard some women say, "Well, if I have to tell him exactly what I want, it doesn't mean so much to me. He ought to know what I want." It takes the joy and the value out of it when I have to tell him. So I'll just hint at it. And then if he catches it, boy, that's great. But what if he doesn't get it? So the point is, we need to adapt to each other's style of communication here. Women need to become a little more direct. And when they do, it can be very helpful. All right, going on to the next one quickly here. For women, it's in the details. Now, it goes something like this. You're sitting in the living room one evening, and out of the blue, she says to you, "Dear, you remember on our second date, the sweater I wore and what color it was? Well, of course, he doesn't remember at all. And of course, he thinks, well, now if I don't remember, she's going to think that I don't care about her. But that's not the case. It's important to understand, again here, the difference between men and women and how it can come out in situations like this and can cause some real difficulty. Women remember things. It's not that men don't have minds that can remember. Men remember a lot of things. But their brains catalog it differently than women do. Women catalog a lot of their memories in association with emotions. It has to do with emotions, their memories. Whereas men catalog things they remember more with facts and solving problems and that type of thing. Listening and solving problems, the next one. Listening and solving problems. She says to him, she starts talking to him and says, "I have a terrible problem." And she starts to go on and on and on talking about this and the emotions that are connected with it. And he said, wait a minute, forget all that. What's the problem? Tell me the problem. Let's solve that problem. What she really wants to do is she's like a pressure cooker. She's got a problem. She's got to release all that pressure first before she can really talk about the problem. Now, if the husband says he has a problem, the wife wants to handle it just like she would want to be handled. She'd like a shoulder to cry on. That's what she wants. She wants to offer that to her husband. Well, that doesn't go over too big. That's not what he wants. He wants the problem solved. So you see, they approach it in very different ways. Listening and solving problems. Men compartmentalize, going on to the next one. Women think big picture. Well, I guess there's a lot of examples we could use here for this one. I suppose the best one to use here, most of us can identify with here, is going shopping. A man, when he goes shopping, has a list, at least most men, they know what they're going for, they go, they get it, and they're ready to go home. A woman, when she goes shopping, is just enjoying the experience of looking around at all the things there. She has a list, and eventually she may buy an item or two, or she may not buy anything. She's just thinking about life in general, the big picture, and looking at things and how it might fit in. The next one, she says too much. He says too little. When a man has a problem, generally speaking, he wants time to sit, take a walk, go in his man cave, go out to the garage, just think things through. And when he's ready, he'll talk about it. Some. A woman has a problem. She can use up her 15,000 words pretty quick. The next one. Women like reminders. Women like reminders. A man should understand that because he told his wife a month ago that he loved her, that doesn't take care of it. She is looking today. What have you done today to show that you love me? Constant reminder. Men are emotional too. This one is women show their emotions in very different ways than men do. Some men show very little emotion. In fact, most men show little emotion. It's not considered manly to show emotion. But that doesn't mean that men don't have emotions. And women sometimes can conclude that their man doesn't have feeling. He's not feeling hurt or sad or down, things like that. Women should never conclude that men are feeling the same thing that they are. Men feel these things in different ways than they do. But it is appropriate for a wife, times when she knows her husband has gone through a difficult time, to ask him gently, "What was it like for you to go through that? What did it feel like for you?" To begin to open up the channels for him to be able to express that to the most important person in his life. Next, she says to him, "You never listen to me. You never listen to me." He says, "I think that's all I do is listen. She talks all the time." It's important to give clues that you are listening. As she talks, "Oh, yes, that's right. I remember. Yes. Okay." Give clues that you're listening. Couch night can be date night. The next one. Meaning that women really enjoy doing special things, usually going out of the house. But for the man, it can be just as special to be together, not doing anything special, but just being there. We often need to understand that. The last one, she says, "I'm capable of doing that myself, thank you." And he thinks, "Oh, she doesn't want my help." Nothing could be further from the truth. Every woman enjoys a man who really wants, really steps in and provides help. But it also needs to be done in a way that doesn't put her down, to respect that she is capable, but to let her know that he's there to help and to provide. A lot more can be said. Time has run out for me to talk more today, but I'm concerned that we take this seriously, that as people of God, that we set a high standard for our homes and our marriages, and that we keep them strong. That's the backbone of our church. It's the backbone of each one of our fellowships. And we need to help one another and encourage one another. And I don't, it doesn't matter where you're at, what's happened in the past. There's forgiveness, there's hope, there's the ability to start over, to be forgiven, and to start anew in Jesus. What he has done for us is so wonderful. Thank you for listening to me today, and I just want to encourage you and ask God's blessing on all of you. Thank you.